This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Adam today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/Adam. Welcome back to the Adam Schefter podcast, as we are now almost 2 weeks away from the NFL draft in Detroit, where young men's dreams will come true, teams will fill needs, and it should be an incredible 3 days with the latest NFL draft. And to help us get ready for the NFL draft, we are going to be joined today by two draft experts from ESPN, two men who do a great job, who have been on this podcast before, and with the insight and information that they brought before, we figured we would bring them back again. Joining us today will be ESPN's NFL draft analysts, Matt Miller and Jordan Reed, as we discuss the wide receivers in this upcoming draft, what Buffalo might try to do to replace Stephon Diggs, and the big decisions that need to be made at the top of the draft, as well as some sleepers and more, coming up next with Matt Miller and Jordan Reed. But first, we get to this week's six-pack with my friend, my colleague, the co-host of the Fantasy Focus podcast, Daniel Dopp, for this week's six-pack.
Thank you very much, Adam Schefter. Topic number one for this week's six-pack. Like you just said, a little over 2 weeks away from the NFL draft. Adam, question I ask you every single week. Talk to me about the quarterback movement and what we have at the top of the draft.
Well, Daniel, I think we could lock in four quarterbacks into the first dozen or so selections. I think that that's going to be simple. And then the question becomes, who goes where? How many? Is there a fifth and a sixth quarterback that creep into the first round, which I certainly think there's a real chance that at least one will. Do I see both Michael Penix from Washington, Bo Nix from Oregon, both getting to the first round? Got a chance. We'll see if it happens. Hard to say. I do think there's a little bit more Michael Penix love than I thought there was, which, again, all it takes is one team. He certainly has people that are concerned, but I think he's got some real supporters. And it's interesting because on Monday, I was having a conversation with our friend Adam Levitin from Establish the Run, who does a great job. And he brought up the fact that on this podcast last week, we created some waves by saying that the signs pointed to Jaden Daniels going to Washington at number two. And Daniel, we're 2 weeks away. I still will stand behind that. The signs continue to point to Jaden Daniels going number two to Washington. So if we created some waves last week, here's some more waves. We're standing behind it right now. We'll see if anything changes in these last 2 weeks. And that would mean Caleb Williams goes one, Jaden Daniels goes two, and that would bring us to New England, which I think would have a decision to make as to whether it would take either Drake May or J.J. McCarthy. Now, let me say this. A lot of people talking about New England moving out of that spot. I don't know about that. I'm not going to tell you they won't. Of course they would for the right offer, but I think it's going to be challenging. I think for New England to trade out of that spot today, 2 weeks out, it's unlikely to happen because they're going to have to move back into a spot where they would lose out on the quarterback that they'd want. And there's going to be a team that has to give up a lot to get up to number three, because we all assume it to be the Minnesota Vikings with their double ones. So I think the first three teams stay where they are in all probability. And I think in all probability, it goes Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, New England's choice of QBs. And then we see later on where J.J. McCarthy goes between picks 4 and, say, 12. Or 4 and 11, really. Or where Michael Penix and Bo Nix slot into, or if they slot into the first round. But these are the kinds of things that keep us going, and we'll have plenty more of this conversation coming up ahead with Matt Miller and Jordan Reed.
Oh, yeah. Adam, I'm curious, when you look at that, if you say that it doesn't feel like the Patriots want to trade out of that situation, does it feel like there is a team in that 4 to 12 range that you mentioned that does look like, hey, you know what, if there was a team that was going to move back, I think this team kind of makes the most sense here?
Well, I think the teams you begin to watch now are the Arizona Cardinals at 4, the the Chargers at 5, and the Giants at 6. Those are the next three slots, right? Now, here's the thing. Again, just like the Patriots would have to move off a quarterback, what would be the price that the Cardinals would be willing to take to move off of Marvin Harrison Jr. or Malik Nabers?
Right.
Who are great wide receiver prospects. By the way, there are people that love Roma Dunze, and they consider him to be right there as well. So is Arizona willing to give up on those receivers to move back? What are they getting back? And is Minnesota going to be willing to give up enough to go up from 11 to 4? Again, this is part of the great intrigue. And if Minnesota's not told, maybe the Chargers will at 5. And the Giants, and I've said this before, I know there's a lot of quarterback noise there at 6. I just don't think they're going quarterback at 6. I think it could be a lot of noise to try to draw up a team to try to trade up to number 6. We'll see how that plays out. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they do take a quarterback at 6. But I think that they have enough needs at wide receiver, offensive tackle, tight end, that they could go ahead and take the best or one of the best wide receivers, the best tight end, maybe the best offensive tackle. That's hard to pass up, but are you willing to give that up to move back to 11 again?
Right.
So those are the things that we're going to be going through here in the last 2 weeks leading up to the draft in Detroit.
All right, Adam. Topic number 2 of this week's six-pack. I just watched WrestleMania 40, Lane Johnson and Jason Kelce go out there as an awesome tandem, surprising everybody. But we're not going to be able to see them, unfortunately, as a tandem on the football field this year. We're going to have a new-look Eagles offensive line. How is that offensive line evolving now for Philly?
Well, you know, I think it's very interesting because this has been the strength of this team for an awful long time. Kelce steps aside, and now you go and sign Landon Dickerson to the richest guard contract in NFL history. You tie him up at left guard, and then you sign Jordan Mailata to another huge extension, making him one of the highest paid tackles in the game. So they have essentially paid up big and secured the future of their left side of their offensive line. They got Lane Johnson, of course, at right tackle. So they're going to have a great offensive line again, but it's an offensive line that's a little bit in transition right now, going younger, going pricier, and I'm sure they're not done adding to it, but by spending as much money as they spent on Dickerson and Mailata, those are huge investments that they are counting on to secure the left side of that offensive line and to be a foundational unit for years to come. So that'll be interesting to see here how it works out, Daniel.
Absolutely it will. I mean, you still got Jalen Hurts under center. That team has a lot left to play for. So obviously keeping that quarterback healthy is going to be big. All right, topic number 3, Adam Schefter. Kyle Duggar signed a 4-year deal with the Patriots. Talk to me about the next tagged player to be signed here, because you love being able to see guys that were tagged end up getting long-term extensions. That's sort of the whole point of this deal.
Yeah. Well, you know what's amazing is usually when we're coming back from our slow period in June and coming back in July, usually you're chasing, the first thing is franchise deals for franchise players, right? But just look so far. The Carolina Panthers traded their franchise pass rusher Brian Burns to the Giants, gets a 5-year, $141 million contract. The Chiefs traded their franchise player Lajarius Sneed to the Titans. He gets a 4-year, $76.4 million contract. The Ravens re-signed their defensive tackle, franchise defensive tackle Justin Matabuki, 4 years, $98 million. The Bears re-signed their franchise cornerback, 4 years, $76 million. The Colts re-signed their franchise wide receiver Michael Pittman, 3 years, $70 million. Patriots re-signed Duggar, 4 years, $58 million. Antoine Winfield is coming up. Josh Allen's coming up. I think I'd be shocked if both those players didn't have deals by the time the franchise deadline to sign long-term extensions rolled around in July. I think both those deals would be done. So that would mean that the only franchise player who did not get a deal, Daniel, is T. Higgins from Cincinnati, who wants a trade. That would be the only one wants a trade. And they have not talked contract, not to my knowledge. We'll see if anybody steps up and tries to get something done for T. Higgins around the draft. I don't think we've heard the last of T. Higgins. We'll see how that shakes out. But T. Higgins looks like when the franchise deadline day rolls around in July 15th, unless he's traded, he'll be the only one of the franchise players, I believe, that doesn't get a long-term deal.
Do you think that it's just that he doesn't get a long-term deal, Adam, or do you think that he's not a member of the Cincinnati Bengals come the start of the season?
I think that the Bengals have not been a team that makes a lot of trades. And to me, the best thing for all sides would be for them to move him. But you got to find a team that's willing to compensate the Bengals and compensate T. Higgins well north of $20 million a year. You know, let's call it $25 million a year. I might be low even. Who knows? So it's a tough deal to pull off. But I can tell you this, T. Higgins wants that deal to come off. And we'll see if it gets done right around the draft. That's the next inflection point.
All right, Adam. Well, topic number four, speaking of high-priced wide receivers moving from one team to another, Bills just moved Stephon Diggs to the Texans. Texans now have a plethora of weapons for C.J. Stroud, Adam. It's not just Nico Collins and Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell. They also brought back Dalton Schultz. They also brought in Joe Mixon. I mean, talk to me how far the Texans have come in such a short amount of time. It feels like this is a totally different team.
Here's what I want to point out to you. A couple of years ago, 2 years ago, they were going away the worst team in the NFL. They were a laughingstock. They had a quarterback who was under investigation, facing suspension, didn't know what to do with him, decided to move forward and trade him. Okay, we're stuck at the quarterback position. What do we do? Got a team that was terrible. Got a team that was losing. Got a team that nobody in the city of Houston cared about. And in 2 years, they've taken an irrelevant NFL franchise and they've made it one of the best franchises in the National Football League.
Yep.
And I guess a lot of the credit goes to Nick Caserio. I think you credit Cal, Hannah McNair, the owners of the team. And honestly, you credit some good luck here too, because they were able to flip Deshaun Watson for all the compensation that they got back. And that was a lot. And then let's also remember, in Lovie Smith's final game as the Houston Texans head coach, they beat the Colts in Indianapolis, and people were laughing. Oh, they lost the number one pick. They're now going number two. Oh, look at the Texans. Lovie's parting gift to them was to screw over the franchise, right? Well, Carolina trades up to number one and takes the quarterback. I don't care what you tell me. I don't care what you tell me. If Houston had the number one pick, I believe they would have taken Bryce Young. Okay, that's what I believe. They would have taken Bryce Young at number one. But because they beat Indianapolis in the last game of the year and lost the number one pick and slid back to number two and watched the number one pick traded to Carolina, which wanted Bryce Young, Houston was forced, in my mind, to take C.J. Stroud. If they had won that game, if they had lost that game in Indianapolis and they had the number one pick, I believe they would have taken Bryce Young. So they get some luck there. They get some great performances from other people. And they take what was an awful franchise and make it one of the best in the National Football League right now. And honestly, that's quite a turnaround in 2 years. There aren't many teams in the NFL, in the history of the league, that have ever had a turnaround as quick and as dramatic and as stunning as the one as the Houston Texans have had here in recent years. But they have had that. They have gotten it done. And they now are one of the model franchises in the league.
All right. Topic number five, Adam. One of the ways, though, that you make this team turn around is you surround your young signal caller with great talent. They did that by trading for Stephon Diggs. Talk to me about the Texans and how they were planning to make this move for another wide receiver.
Well, Daniel, on this podcast last week, we mentioned the fact that the signs pointed to Jaden Daniels. And we mentioned the fact before the Diggs trade went down, to watch the Houston Texans, because it was they and not the Minnesota Vikings that initiated the trade in which the Vikings acquired an extra first-round draft pick. So when people saw that trade go down and Houston move out of the first round and Minnesota get double ones at number 11 and number 23, everybody thought, oh, here comes Minnesota trying to trade up for a quarterback, when in fact, it was just the opposite. It was Houston moving on from round one, acquiring extra round two draft capital, because the Texans knew that they had a chance to go get Stephon Diggs. They didn't need a one to go get him. They were going to need an extra two, and that's what they wound up trading, a 2025 two, when it could have been a two this year, but that's not where it landed eventually during the course of the trade conversations. But they had the extra two capital that they needed by initiating the trade that moved them out of the first round for extra draft picks that gave Minnesota the added ones that it needed to potentially make another quarterback move. But the Texans were the one that started that trade and then finished it off by acquiring Stephon Diggs, giving CJ Stroud, the quarterback that they were fortunate to get, another weapon on the offensive side of the football. And by the way, is there any team in the AFC right now that has as much offensive firepower as the Houston Texans? I mean, there's some, like the Baltimore Ravens are really loaded with Derrick Henry and Mark Andrews and some of the young talent that they have with Lamar Jackson. Joe Burrow has got a lot of talent around him in Cincinnati. But is there a team out there with more talent, offensive talent, than the Houston Texans? I don't know about that. Miami's pretty good too. Miami's pretty good. But I think I might take Houston's offensive crew over anybody's right now.
Yeah, they have as many skill position players, as many weapons as you could potentially have for CJ Stroud, which is fantastic. All right, Adam, let's finish this thing out. Topic number six, Diggs moves from the Bills to the Texans.
Yeah.
Now the Bills have lost Stephon Diggs. They have lost Gabe Davis to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Their starting wide receivers, as it stands, are Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir, with rookie tight end Dalton Kincaid heading into his second season. What do the Bills do now at the wide receiver position?
Well, you forgot Mac Collins, who they signed in free agency.
You're right. Sorry about that, Mac.
Yeah, but the fact of the matter is they had a lot of wide receivers, and Diggs is in Houston, and Gabe Davis signed with Jacksonville. And so this is a team now that needs to find a way to add some wide receiver talent in the draft. And they could go ahead and use their first-round pick on a wide receiver, or potentially they could trade that first-round pick, move back into the second round, and then go get more wide receivers. That might not be the worst thing to do either here, Daniel. The Bills will have options, but it's very apparent and clear that they're going to be addressing the wide receiver position up high, maybe multiple times up high, because they now have a vacancy. You know, the one thing that they did do, everybody talked about that the cap charge they had to absorb on Stephon Diggs, the highest of any wide receiver in history, over $31 million, a big cap charge that they had to absorb. And that is all true. But I think that people might be looking at that in the wrong way. Yes, you take on that big cap charge, but you also clear out his money for the future, because he was counting against the cap anyway. But now they will clear out over $60 million against their cap the next 3 years. So, hey, yes, big cap charge this year, but free of $60 million in future years. And that's going to allow the Buffalo Bills to make some more moves. And as we get ready for the draft in 2 weeks, we will wait to see what the Buffalo Bills will do at wide receiver. And that was where we decided to focus the first part of our conversation with ESPN draft analysts Matt Miller and Jordan Reed, as we touch on the Bills' wide receiver position, the quarterbacks in this upcoming draft, players that they would invest in, and some sleepers for the late rounds. Without further ado, ESPN draft analysts Matt Miller and Jordan Reed. All right, Matt, Jordan, we had a shakeup last week with the Buffalo Bills dealing Stephon Diggs to the Houston Texans. So I'm going to start there, and we'll start with Matt. Can you see a wide receiver being available for Buffalo when its turn rolls around in the first round?
Yeah, Adam, I can. I think, you know, the Bills obviously have started stacking their board. They know where the strengths of this draft are, and one of the clear-cut strengths is at wide receiver. So 28 in the first round, I know we're all thinking, goodness, there's going to be five receivers drafted before that point. Certainly four receivers drafted before that point. I think the great news for Buffalo is in this draft specifically, that fifth or sixth wide receiver would probably be a number two wideout in most classes because of how deep this group is. So we could realistically be looking at someone like Adonai Mitchell from Texas, who could be available at 28, depending on where the run on wide receiver happens in the middle of the draft, the first round. And that's a true X wide receiver that could you know, be that replacement for not just Stephon Diggs, but also Gabe Davis as they really kind of remake that wide receiver room.
So I think it's really going to be interesting to see what happens with Buffalo. And even before the Stephon Diggs trade, I thought they were going to be aggressive in the wide receiver market, especially at number 28 overall. But this wide receiver class is so deep. I don't know if Brandon Bean is going to sit back and let the board fall to him, just because we've seen in previous years that he likes to trade up when he sees somebody that he likes. But I kind of get the feel that he sees the Kansas City Chiefs, he sees the Green Bay Packers of how they value wide receiver on day two. And especially with them kind of being cap strung now, especially with the Stephon Diggs, a dead cap number on their books this year. And I think with Josh Allen getting more expensive now, they could go the trade back route and really just double up on wide receiver in the second or even the third round. Just because with Josh Allen, he's so good, they maybe depend on him uplifting some young receivers and allowing them to grow together. So they could trade back from 28. And that's not to say they're not going to look to trade up, but I wouldn't be surprised if they trade back, just because of they do need to get a little bit cheaper, especially with Josh Allen getting more expensive now.
Jordan, Matt brought up the name A.D. Mitchell. You're bringing up the idea of trading back. Let's say, hypothetically, Buffalo does trade back. Even if they don't trade back, there are some teams that don't get wide receivers early that may want them in the first half of round two. Give me some guys outside the top six. And the top three in this draft, in no particular order, obviously Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze, A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, Brian Thomas. Those are the six guys that I think most people agree are going to be ones, correct?
Yeah, okay. I agree.
So if Buffalo's trading back, or you're looking to take a wide receiver at the back end of round one into the first half of round two, who does that now fall upon? Give me that group of guys right there.
Well, I think Buffalo needs that big X boundary wide receiver, and there's two names that I think they're going to love if they do end up trading back. And the first one is Xavier Leggett of South Carolina. He's one that's come on really strong, and it took him a while to break out at South Carolina, but he had a really good year last year, and he fits really well into what they want to do in Buffalo. And the other is Keon Coleman of Florida State, who started out the season really hot, and then Jordan Travis got hurt, and his production kind of slipped a little bit too. Then he didn't test as well as far as from a 40 perspective. He ended up running a 4.61, I believe it was, at the combine, so he didn't run relatively well. And there's some questions about if he can separate or some stuff like that, but as far as matching up with Josh Allen's qualities, I think both of those players, they're going to be big fans of both of them.
Matt, I want to go back to the wide receivers at the top of the draft, because I've actually had people tell me that they think Malik Nabers could wind up going ahead of Marvin Harrison Jr. How do you see the top three wide receivers, when I've actually heard arguments on behalf of all three guys, Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, and Roma Dunze, all being the number one wide receiver prospect in this class?
Yeah, and that's something back at the Senior Bowl. I had a report in one of our draft notebooks about that, that a handful of teams at that time thought Malik Nabers was the top receiver in the class. So I'm not surprised to hear that. You know, I think if the three of us sat down in a room together and watched film on these wide receivers, we would all probably end up with different things we liked about each of them. That's what's happening now. And especially as you scout for an individual scheme like the Arizona Cardinals, you're probably going to want something different than a team like the Buffalo Bills might want, or like the Los Angeles Chargers might want. So I think that's where some of the discrepancy comes in, is for your scheme, Malik Nabers with that awesome speed and yards after catch ability might be more attractive to you than, you know, this true vertical receiver who's a great route runner in Marvin Harrison Jr. Or maybe you look at what San Francisco has done with two really like bullies playing wide receiver, and you would love Roma Dunze because you want that 215-pound guy that's just going to dominate on 50-50 balls. So I think some of it comes down to the type of quarterback you have and then the type of offense you run, and trying to decide which of those wide receivers best fits what you want. But those are the three. The order they come off the board, I think, will be one of the most fascinating parts of the first round.
Well, Matt, if you had a top pick, you had the fourth pick in this draft, and you could pick any receiver, who are you picking?
I'll tell you, Marvin Harrison Jr. We have seen this dude dominate from the jump, and, you know, did so this past year with not a great quarterback situation at Ohio State. One of the most fascinating things to me is you lose C.J. Stroud, you lose Jackson Smith and Jigba, and Marvin Harrison Jr.'s numbers were basically the same this year, where you knew he was going to be the guy. They didn't have that great quarterback prospect, and he was still unstoppable. So I would go Marvin Harrison Jr. The pedigree's fantastic. The route running, the hands, I mean, he's the total package, and he's had that production over the last, you know, 2+ years that makes me feel a little bit better about him, as opposed to, as much as I like Neighbors and Odunze, I think Harrison's just the total package.
Jordan, if you had the fourth pick in this draft, and I said you have your choice of wide receivers, who are you taking, Jordan?
I agree. It'd be Marvin Harrison Jr. for me, okay. And I think he's the best player in the draft, regardless of position. And that includes the quarterbacks at the top with Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, and then also Drake May as well. It's just the movement skills, the hand-eye coordination, the ability to make contested catches, and then Matt hit the nail on the head. He talked about it a little bit. Even though Ohio State had subpar quarterback play last year, everybody in the stadium knew the ball was going to go to number 18. He still was able to produce consistently week in and week out. And I think that's going to carry over. And you pair him with a player like Kyler Murray, who likes to throw what I like to call those faith throws, just throw the ball up and hope for the best. We saw how good he was when he was paired with DeAndre Hopkins, who I think skill set is very similar to Marvin Harrison Jr. from a contested catch standpoint. I just think he's the best overall player in this draft class.
Okay, Jordan, here's my next question as we rifle through a bunch of draft questions. How many quarterbacks do you foresee going in round one?
I honestly feel comfortable about four right now, Adam. I just talked about the three, and then also I would add in J.J. McCarthy of Michigan. But after that, it gets really spotty, depending on who you ask inside of the league, just because there's a lot of variables attached to Bo Nix as well as Michael Penix Jr. of Washington with the durability, and then just the upside with Bo Nix. How much is there left to uncover with him? So right now I feel good about four going in the first round, but every year we see somebody trade into the back end of the first round. It would not be surprising if a team does end up doing that with Nix or Penix.
Matt, how many quarterbacks you see going in round one?
Yeah, I'm going to go five. I'll go one more. And I think here's my reasoning is that we saw – you know, the quarterback market gets shaken up pretty strongly this offseason. It's like the entire 2020 and 2021 and 22 draft classes at quarterback were basically traded outside of Trevor Lawrence. You got Sam Howell on the move, Kenny Pickett's on the move. Every team, it felt like, secured their QB1 and QB2 in this offseason, except for the Denver Broncos. They're that team out there that did nothing. In fact, they lost Russell Wilson. They didn't jump in on Justin Fields. They didn't jump in on any quarterback that was available. They're rolling with Jarrett Stidham and Ben DiNucci right now. That screams to me like Sean Payton knows that he can get a quarterback in this draft. They don't have a second round pick. Do I think 12 overall is way too early for the fifth quarterback in this draft? Absolutely it is. But we know that at that position, it doesn't matter where we have guys ranked because teams need them. They're going to overdraft them. So that's why I think we see five. And I think Denver is that fifth team. Now, maybe they trade back from 12. It would be very risky to trade back and still get your quarterback. But I think the Broncos are that team that they have to do something. They can't go into the season with those two quarterbacks only. And so it feels like there'll be a team that jumps into that quarterback mix.
So, Matt, who's the fifth quarterback after J.J. McCarthy? And, of course, we have Caleb Williams and Jaden Daniels and Drake May and J.J. McCarthy in the first four slots. Who, in your mind, is the fifth quarterback here?
I'll go with Bo Nix specifically for the Denver Broncos. I think that touch accuracy that Nix has, 61 starts in college, that's the most ever for a quarterback. So he comes in ready to go right away. He has good mobility, you know, battled the adversity of following in his father's footsteps, going to Auburn. Things did not go well for him there. He goes to Oregon and really reinvented himself as a thrower, became much more poised in the pocket, but still using that mobility that was kind of a hallmark of his early career. So I think Nix fits with what Sean Payton wants to do specifically. Now, if it's not Denver, if we were going to say the fifth quarterback is the Las Vegas Raiders, I would say Michael Penix Jr. because he better fits what they want to do. But I think with Denver specifically, Nix with the accuracy, the experience, the poise in the pocket, those things all better fit with Sean Payton. Traditionally, looks for at the quarterback spot.
Jordan, who's your fifth quarterback in this draft?
I would go with Michael Penix Jr. Just because of the upside factor with him. And depending on who you ask, there's a lot of mixed opinions about him. And it seems like a lot of teams are trying to hide their opinion about him, whether it's the medical situation with him. We know four season-ending injuries in consecutive seasons, but we also have to give him credit for staying healthy over the past 2 years. And he basically reinvented himself when he went to Washington. So it's just a matter of long-term, how much do you trust the injury factor to hold up with him? The talent is the least of questions with him, but it's just the lack of mobility and then the durability concerns with Michael Penix Jr. I think he has one of the strongest arms overall in this draft class. He's one of the best deep passers in this draft class too. He had what I believe it was 74 completions of 20 plus yards last year, which was the most in the FBS. We saw what he was able to do against Texas, where he was absolutely phenomenal. But on the opposite end of the spectrum, we saw what he was in the national title game against Michigan. So it's just a matter of which player do you trust you're going to get on the next level. I would circle the Las Vegas Raiders. They make a lot of sense to me, whether it's at 44 or even trading back up into the back end of the first round. 13 is a little bit too early for me, for Penix, but would it surprise me? You never know, Adam, honestly, with these quarterbacks. But Penix would be the fifth guy for me to come off the board.
Would either one of you be surprised if six quarterbacks snuck into the first round, if we saw four guys go in the first dozen or so picks, and then somehow, some way, somewhere along the way, another one goes, and then maybe a team trades into the back half or the back part of the first round to get that quarterback on the fifth-year option, if that's what they decide to do? Could you see a scenario where there are six quarterbacks in round one?
I could see it. I mean, I think we all assume right now the Minnesota Vikings trade up and get that fourth quarterback in the class. And then we just talked about Denver needs a quarterback. The Raiders need a quarterback. And it feels like now more than ever is the time to be aggressive. And I'll say, not to jump way too far ahead, there's not a lot of excitement about the 2025 quarterback class. Now, we know that will change. Someone will become the belle of the ball and teams will fall in love with them. But as of right now, at least, and that's the conversation, Jordan, you and I had at the combine was, there's not a lot of love right now, at least, for next year's quarterback class. So we absolutely could see a team, I think, you get a little bit antsy and jump up to get, whether it be Knicks or Penix.
What stands out to you about that conversation you had with Matt at the combine, Jordan?
Well, I mean, there is not a lot of excitement about the quarterback class. But just going back to Matt's point, let's say Knicks does go to the Broncos at 12. I think with that sixth guy, it boils down to one team, and it's the New York Giants and how they feel about Daniel Jones. I don't think they're going to take a quarterback at six. I think they would rather get Romo Dunze, Malik Nabers, or whatever other receivers left. Let's say Marvin does miraculously fall to six, just because they need a wide receiver one. So depending on how the Giants feel about Daniel Jones and how much job security that they have going forward, is Brian Daboll and Joe Shane going to be able to survive this year? Let's say they give Daniel Jones another chance. Do they want to go ahead and take the quarterback trading back up into the back end of the first round? They already relinquished one pick with the Brian Burns trade, but they still do have number 37 overall, I believe it is. So they still do have a second round pick. So are they the miraculous sixth team that trades up into the back end of the first round to come get Bo Nix or Michael Penix Jr.?
See, I think there's some teams out there that are sneaky quarterback teams. Now, I'm not telling you that they'll do anything, but would you be shocked if somewhere along the way, the Los Angeles Rams took a quarterback? Would you be shocked if the New Orleans Saints took a quarterback? Would you be shocked if the Giants traded back in, if they don't go quarterback at six? Would you be shocked if, I'm just thinking there's a few teams right there, the New York Jets somehow, not at 10, took a quarterback? Like, there are teams out there that I think people aren't talking about that could make some noise around the draft relatively early on a quarterback. All right, let's go beyond the top six. Give me a quarterback, Matt, the back half of the draft, backgrounds that you're looking at that you think has a chance to stick in the NFL.
Yeah, back half, it gets watered down pretty quickly. We just did an exercise, Jordan and I did, where we drafted all the quarterbacks in this class, and it got a little tough after the top seven guys, especially. But you know, I like Austin Reed out of Western Kentucky. He was a West Florida transfer, a little bit of a pocket passer, but he can operate off schedule, off platform. He's experienced. He's a super quick processor. He does a great job of taking what's there. You know, he's not going to force things. He doesn't try to, you know, the faith throws that Jordan was talking about. You don't see a lot of that with Austin Reed. More of, you know, kind of a check down guy, a little bit on the safer side of things. But if I had to bet on, you know, one guy late in this draft that, you know, maybe could play earlier than expected, and it's not the super traitsy type player that you're taking and hoping you can develop, I'll go with Austin Reed.
Jordan?
I would go with Michael Pratt of Tulane. He's one that's been impressive to me throughout the process. And there was a lot of buzz about him coming into the year, and he did not have the season that he wanted to last year. And he was hurt against the Ole Miss game. It was the game that he missed, and there were a lot of scouts that were looking forward to that game. He unfortunately did not get to play, but at the Senior Bowl, he showed some positive traits that a lot of people were really raving about. He kind of reminds you of, and not saying he's going to turn into this player, but Kirk Cousins, when he was coming out of Michigan State, just very smart, really accurate, not the strongest arm in the world, but just has a really high football IQ. So Pratt will be one that I would spotlight here.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jets Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jets is better. With the thickest, crispest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any eight-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jets signature eight-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jets Pizza, better because it has to be. This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different stressors. I do, you do, we all do, big, small. And when we keep them bottled up, as I sometimes have had happen in the past, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Adam today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Adam. Now, if you had to invest your draft or bet on a guy, buy draft stock in a player, that's not as obvious, right? We're not talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. here. Who's the guy that you would buy draft stock in going into this draft the next couple of weeks? Matt?
Oh, my goodness. That is a tough question. If I had to buy stock in someone, I'll go with Troy Fitano from Washington, the offensive lineman. Someone who really, really good tape. There were a lot of questions. Is he a tackle? Is he a guard? We saw him at the combine, you know, just amazing agility. I think that answered a lot of the questions. He's just a little bit short. He has the arm length. He has the agility, just, you know, 6'4", so a little bit short for tackle. But he's that guy. Every time I watch, I fall in love a little bit more. And there are a lot of variances around the NFL on who the second tackle in this class is. Is it Olufashano? Is it Lisa Fuaga? I think you have to throw Fitano in that mix, somebody that could be a top 15 pick that maybe isn't being discussed enough right now, at least.
It'd be Joe Alt for me of Notre Dame. He's by far the best prospect that I saw in the fall when I go through each and every school live scouting these guys. Every bit of 6'9", 321 pounds. If we literally had a checkbox or a checklist, he would check every single box that we're looking for. Dad is in the Ring of Honor. He actually was a tight end 3 years ago, transferred over to offensive tackle and made the seamless transition. He has the arm length. He has the athleticism. He just continued to check boxes throughout the process. So it reminds me a lot of Taylor Decker when he was coming out of Ohio State. He's a little bit bigger than Decker, and I don't think he's ever going to be a high-end starter. He's not going to be, you know, Trent Williams or Tristan Wirfs. He's never going to be that tier of offensive tackle, but like Jake Matthews, Taylor Decker, somebody that's going to play 10 to 12 plus years and just be a solid starter.
Who's the first defensive player off the board here?
Well, I'll go Dallas Turner. I think this – when you sit down to do a mock draft, Dallas Turner to the Atlanta Falcons just feels very, very right. They need pass rushers badly. And there's going to be that run on offensive players with the quarterbacks, the receivers, probably one tackle, Joe Alt to the Titans. I think Dallas Turner makes a ton of sense. And Atlanta could go Turner or Terrion Arnold. Just take an Alabama defensive player if you're the Atlanta Falcons and you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I agree. I have a hard time seeing Dallas Turner not being the first one off of the board just because of the pedigree. And the big question about him entering the year was how good was he going to be now that Will Anderson Jr. was gone opposite of him? And I thought he answered every single question that he needed to last year. And he was terrific at the combine too, one of the better overall testers out of this defensive end group.
You know what? I'll go back to the combine. And I had a GM tell me, mark my words, and again, we'll see if he's right, but Penn State defensive end Chop Robinson will wind up getting drafted ahead of Dallas Turner.
Wow. That would surprise me. It would, yeah, it would be a surprise.
Well, hold on. Now, I'm not telling he's right. That was the opinion of one GM. And this guy said to me, I'm not alone in that feeling. I think there are other people that feel that way. And every year there are surprises. I have no idea whether he's going to be right or not. I'm always listening. This guy was of the mind that Chop Robinson would go ahead of Dallas Turner.
That would
I would say that would be the shock of the draft for a guy. Steele had six sacks in college. So that would be my immediate thing is, yeah, I mean, he ran a 4.48. Dallas Turner actually ran faster. He ran a 4.46. And Chop only had six sacks his entire Penn State career. That would absolutely floor me. That would be the shock of round one. But I guess now we'll be prepared for it if it happens.
Are there any other surprises that either one of you are looking for in round one, a surprise that we should be on the lookout for here in the upcoming draft? Matt?
I mean, I would have said J.J. McCarthy going in the top four like 3 weeks ago, and I think that would have been a surprise. But now it feels like that's becoming common knowledge. So I'll go one better. J.J. McCarthy going QB3 or even two. I think J.J. has a chance to go much higher than people think. So if you want to – we're talking surprises, not predictions. But if you want a surprise that I think is at least rooted in some reality, it's been very interesting to hear the buzz on McCarthy going up, whereas the buzz on J.J. or Drake May, excuse me, is seemingly going down right now. Now, we'll see if that actually matters. You know, it feels like every year this does happen. Last year, remember, everyone was suddenly down on C.J. Stroud and up on Anthony Richardson. C.J. still went number two overall, was still Offensive Rookie of the Year, and has completely changed that franchise. But I think at least, you know, we're sitting here 3 weeks out from the draft. The idea that McCarthy could go above Drake May is certainly very real.
And you're even saying above Jaden Daniels here.
I wouldn't be shocked. I just wouldn't be. I wouldn't do it, but I just wouldn't be shocked.
See, that would surprise me. And I'm a huge J.J. McCarthy guy, and I've always thought he was going to be a first-round pick. And I am a big guy. Believe in him. Count on him. Would love to see a team draft him. But essentially, I can't see him going ahead of Jaden Daniels.
Remember, you asked for a surprise, not a prediction, a surprise, okay?
Jordan, give me a first-round surprise.
I think the order of these offensive tackles going in the draft, and one that I've continued to hear that has a lot of love that could actually be the first offensive tackle off of the board, is J.C. Latham of Alabama. There's a lot of love for him out of there. There is some mixed opinions about him as far as what he's going to be on the next level. Is he a right tackle or is he a left tackle? I think he's firmly a right tackle. But as far as the strength, how ready he is, pro ready right away, stepping through the door, there's a lot of love out there for J.C. Latham of Alabama.
That's actually been out there a couple of times. I've heard that. Where's that coming from, that he could be one of the top, if not the top tackle taken in this upcoming draft? What's that about?
I mean, it's just the fact that he's so pro ready right now. And once you get those few bad plays that he had in a national title game against Michigan out of your head, he was really consistent for the most part last year. But it's just, he has some things to clean up as a pass protector. He allows a lot of inside pressure over his inside shoulder. And there is some questions about his foot quickness and if that's going to translate to the next level. But offensive line coaches, him just mauling people on tape, you can see a lot of teams falling in love with that strength and the power that he has.
Jordan, you bring up Michigan. And I remember being at the school last summer and the program telling me that they thought that they would have 18 players picked in this upcoming draft. Now, last year, Georgia, when it won the national title, had 15. And Michigan sent 18 players to the combine, which was a record. Is there a guy in this class outside of J.J. McCarthy from Michigan producing all the pro talent that it now is that has caught your attention more than others?
I would go with wide receiver Roman Wilson. He's one that I thought was terrific at the Senior Bowl. And he was only there the first 2 days. He left the third day just because his performance was so good. He said, I'll see you guys later. There was some things that happened as far as an injury standpoint of where he just went home after that, but he didn't need to show anything else. He was so good when he was at the Senior Bowl. But what's so fascinating in that we're finding out now with a lot of these Michigan offensive prospects is that they had a lot of hidden talent just because they didn't involve the passing game a whole bunch, whether it's J.J. McCarthy, Roman Wilson, Cornelius Johnson, who's probably going to be a really good late round selection for somebody on the next level too, is that they have a lot of talent. They just were not able to showcase it. So Roman Wilson is one that I definitely am intrigued by on the next level.
Matt?
I'll tell you a quick Roman Wilson story. I was at the Michigan Pro Day covering it for the network, and the jugs machine broke, and Roman Wilson went and fixed it. And I asked him about it, and he's like, that's my baby. Like, that's, no one else is allowed to run it. The jugs machine's my baby. So he saved the Pro Day with, you know, the punt return part of it because he fixed the jugs machine. So you get a mechanic and a wide receiver if you draft Roman Wilson. You know, I absolutely love Junior Colson, the linebacker who played, you know, it felt like he had a cast on his hand for the last 2 years. But every time I watch Michigan play, I fall in love with Junior Colson. I think he is exactly what teams need in the middle of their defense. He reminds me so much of Nick Bolton when Nick was coming out of Missouri. He's not going to wow you with measurables or 40-yard dash times. In fact, he didn't even run a 40 in this process, but just the tape with the relentless pursuit, the instincts, how smart he is in getting everyone lined up. We know that Michigan defense was amazing. They're going to have a couple first-round picks next year. That's how great this defense was. But Colson is the guy that I go back to. He and Mikey Sanger still are the players that it feels like every snap on defense, they are responsible for getting everyone ready. And I think that's going to play really well early in the NFL.
Let me say this, that I think Roman Wilson has got a chance to be a really good player. And Junior Colson, I went back to Jim Harbaugh's charity golf tournament last summer, and he was my partner. We played golf together and talked about the upcoming draft and how much he was looking forward to that and how high he thought he could go and the impact that he thought he could make. But Mikey Sanders still, oh my God, I love that guy. I think that guy is a player. That guy I'd want on my team any day making plays. How high is he going to go? Is he around, is he a two or a three?
I have a two on him, like a late two. I'd be interested. And I'm like shuffling my board as we speak. So I'll be interested to hear what Jordan says.
He's in my top 50. He's my 50th ranked player. That's how much I love them. I would take him in the second round, but for whatever reason, the NFL has this weird trend of where they just don't like taking nickel only corners before the third round. But he's one player that's going to go in the third round, and you're going to be like, man, how did he not go early day two?
Yeah, he's a steal in round three if you can get him there. I have a feeling he may sneak into round two. I hope he does for his sake, but wherever he goes, it'll be a place that values him. And that guy just has a nose for making plays, seems like a leader, and that's a guy that I would want on my team in the National Football League. All right, Matt, Jordan, before I let you leave, give me one sleeper outside the quarterbacks that we talked about to look out for later in the draft, somebody that's caught your eye that you would recommend to a team drafting in the late rounds, Matt.
Any position?
Any position. Have at it.
Oh my goodness, this is to go from like 500 players.
Well, you know what? I asked you to buy draft stock in somebody. So now I'm asking you to take a flyer on somebody who's caught your eye, somebody who's got your attention, somebody who you believe in spending a late round pick on.
Yeah, you know what? I'll go with Missouri running back Cody Schrader. I absolutely love his story to go from Truman State to walking on at Mizzou and was such almost an afterthought there. And then he goes and leads the SEC in rushing this past year. So that type of determination, to battle the adversity, to bet on yourself, and to go from an MIAA school to Missouri and lead the SEC in rushing says so much about who he is as a person, as a player. I mean, we're talking about probably a fifth or sixth round pick, but every year one of those running backs seems to break out. And so I'll take Cody Schrader as, again, the guy that you want to recommend to a team. It's because of that fight. Obviously, someone that loves the game of football to work that hard to improve their game and to bet on themselves. So I think that's the type of player you're looking for in that scenario.
Jordan?
Oh, man, there's so many that I could choose from.
Feel free to rattle up a couple. You don't have to limit it to one.
I'm going to show the offensive lineman some love here. So there's a center at Penn State named Hunter Norzad. I'm a big fan of him. He actually started his career at Cornell. He was there for 3 years from 2018 to 2021. And he was offensive tackle there, three-time all-conference player, transfers to Penn State, ends up playing guard his first year, and then transitions to center this year. And he was absolutely terrific. Seeing him throughout the pre-draft process, he was down at the East-West Shrine Bowl down in Frisco, Texas. I thought he was one of the better players there. So having that Ivy League degree, being as a center, tough, gritty guy, he's my type of center. So Hunter Norzad is definitely one.
You guys fired up for the draft here or what, Matt?
I'm fired up. It's also, we're getting to that point where you realize how much work you still have to do. And we've got 3 weeks. So it's also that part of it of, we'll sleep in May. I think it's kind of where I'm at right now, trying to get all these day three players studied.
Is that the work that's left studying the day three players right now?
That's what's left for me. Given our particular assignments, that's where I'm at. We spend so much of the year talking about Caleb Williams and Drake May and JJ McCarthy. And then you get to this part of it. And I think that's a lot of the behind the scenes, at least from my perspective, is, having a couple minutes worth of talking points on hopefully every player that could potentially be drafted. So, a lot of time right now spent texting scouts of like, hey, do you think this guy could get drafted? Or like, what, is it worth my time to maybe take an hour or two today to watch this player? Or is there, you know, are they kind of above or below that Mendoza line, basically? So that's what I'm grinding on right now, at least.
And you, Jordan, what do you got left here?
Just stacking your big board. That's what I'm in the process now, calling scouts, evaluators, just because our biggest fear as draft analysts is having or not having somebody on our big board that ends up getting drafted, just because you're scrambling, trying to figure out this guy, and this guy. So it's just a matter of stacking the big board and making sure that you have everybody in place.
So that is your biggest fear. Has it ever happened that somebody wound up in the top 30 that you didn't have there?
Yeah, so it happened last year. There was a punter from Wingate. I believe it was the Rams that drafted him. They drafted him pretty early, too. I believe it was the fourth round. I didn't have him on my board at all. So there's always – and it's not just position guys. It's specialists, too. You want to make sure you have them on your board.
You know, the Packers used to do that every year. They would try to draft a player that no one had. And it was like a running joke in their front office. And I used to get texts of, did you have this guy? And I'm like, no. Like, no one's ever heard of this player before. I didn't even know where you found him. So – there's, I also think teams like to mess with us and see if they can pull one over on us.
It's got to be incredibly difficult to do that in this day and age, to find somebody that hasn't been uncovered to a certain extent, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Which is great. Like, the internet has made our jobs, I think, easier in some degree, because it is easier to find those, you know, the guys from Wingate and the players from, you know, I watched a wide receiver from, you know, SUNY Cortland last week. And it's like, you know, those are just the players that I feel like 5-6 years ago would have been much harder to find.
By the way, who is the number one quarterback prospect in the 2025 draft that you guys already have maligned? I'm just curious.
Oh, man. Carson Beck, I guess.
I would
not want to put my name next to anyone this early. I know that.
Yeah. So I have our 2025 mock this year. So I've already started watching some of the big name
guys.
God
bless you.
I mean, Carson Beck would be the one right now. Him and Shador Sanders, those are probably your top two going into next year. But, I mean, we've already touched on it a little bit. There's not a whole bunch of excitement out there about the top guys right now, but Shador and then also Carson Beck, those are probably your two. And then, of course, Quinn Ewers of Texas, there's still some excitement about him, but he has to take that next step next year.
Well, Jordan, Matt, I appreciate you guys taking the next step with me today. I wish you luck in the final weeks of preparation, getting your big board set and studying up for those late round prospects. I appreciate your time. We'll look forward to seeing you in Detroit. Thank you very much for the time and the insight today.
You bet. Thanks, Adam.
Thanks as always, Adam.
And there they are, Matt Miller, Jordan Reed, getting us ready for the NFL draft that will be on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Radio, ESPN Plus, ESPN everything. Thursday, Friday, Saturday from Detroit should be a highly intriguing 3 days as the future for each franchise begins to take hold and we see the moves that they make. And that's one of the things I love about the draft, and I'll say it over and over again. We talk about what teams may or may not be doing, but that those 3 days, those are the moments of truth. No more lying. We get to see what each team is thinking, and we are all ready for it 2 weeks from now in Detroit. All right. Daniel, you are in our fantasy basketball league that I love so dearly. I don't know if you are aware of an all-time story from Sunday night that basically decided the championship of the NBA War Room title this past year. Are you aware of this, Daniel?
I'm not. I would love to know more, though, Adam.
Okay. So I, as you know, I'm a fantasy basketball fanatic, junkie. And so being that my team had already been eliminated, I was tracking to see who would win the championship this year. And in the finals this year, we had Rex Ryan, who was in his first year in the league, who loves playing fantasy basketball, and Kyle Soppy, who left our company for Pro Football Network. So we got Rex Ryan versus Kyle Soppy from Pro Football Network. Yep. And at about 9:50 on Sunday night, Rex is up 5-3-1, because that's how it works. It's nine categories that you have to win. They're tied in block shots, tied, which is the one tie, and Rex is up in the deciding category of assist turnover ratio by 0.01. And at that moment, Kyle Soppy's last and only player, and I hope I pronounce it right, was Julian Champagne from San Antonio, who not only was in overtime, but was in double overtime.
double overtime at 9:51. So Rex texts me that he had Mike Conley, the last player in their matchup, starting tipping off at 10 o'clock versus the Los Angeles Lakers. He had a 0.01 assist turnover ratio. He's like, what should I do? I'm like, let's see if this Spurs game ends and you're winning. Because if it ends and you're winning, you can pull Mike Conley and win the championship. Well, the game was not over. There was a minute and 9 seconds left in the double overtime game of the Spurs Sunday night game, whoever they were playing. So Rex had to leave in Mike Conley because blocks were still tied. And assist turnover ratio, he was up 0.01. And you don't know, Julian Champagne could get either a block or an assist at the end in the final 109 to secure a victory. So he's got to play Mike Conley. You agree?
I mean, you can't not play Mike Conley in that situation. You can't,
but,
right?
But Daniel, if the Spurs game ended in regulation,
right?
Rex would have won the championship 5-3-1. He could have deactivated Mike Conley.
Pull him out,
secured the victory. If the game had ended after one overtime period, he could have benched Mike Conley and won the, but it went double overtime. It went double overtime. And because it went double overtime, and because the game went past 10 o'clock Eastern on Sunday night by 1:09, he had to start Mike Conley.
Oh my gosh.
And what happened? Before he did that, I said, well, hold on, let me check Mike Conley's stats. His assist turnover ratio the last 30 days, I broke it down, was 3.75. His assist turnover ratio the last 15 days was 2.75. So if there's one guy you want to start in that spot, it would be Mike Conley.
Yeah, those are good numbers.
Great numbers. Guess what? Mike Conley that night had four turnovers, and Rex lost the championship by 0.001 because of Conley's four turnovers in a game he had to play him.
Oh my gosh.
When he was up to begin with, because the other game went double overtime and didn't end by 10 o'clock.
Oh my gosh. I love that Rex Ryan was so into it that you guys were texting the night of to be able to talk about what's going on. Shout out to Kyle Soppy, though. Adam, you talked about it earlier in the podcast. Sometimes you just need a little bit of luck. You know what I mean? Who would have thought double overtime was what you needed to bring home the championship?
Oh, my God. Well, I called Rex on Monday morning to console him and to tell him the story of about 4 years ago when I was playing one Eddie Marlette in the final round. And it was a very similar situation. It was the final game on the final week in the final game of the night. It was the Lakers versus the Kings. And he and I were tied in every category but field goal percentage. I had a minuscule field goal percentage lead. And so at that point in time, I had LeBron James and De'Aaron Fox going. Now, the interesting part was he had traded me De'Aaron Fox about 6 weeks earlier. And in the final minute of the Kings-Lakers game, in the final minute of our championship season, LeBron James and De'Aaron Fox combined to miss three field goals and cost me field goal percentage by 0.001, and I lost a title that way. And I said to Eddie Marlette that De'Aaron Fox, I believe, was a double agent that he traded to me to sink me in the final minute of the championship round. So fantasy matchups, they end in the wildest of ways, in ways that you never would imagine. Rex lost because the Spurs game went double overtime. He had to play Conley, and Conley had four turnovers against the Lakers Sunday night. I lost because De'Aaron Fox and LeBron James missed three shots in the final minute of a Spurs King or Lakers Kings game 4 years ago on a Sunday night. And that's how things are decided. Fantasy championships. Rex is devastated, but I told Rex, you'll be back next year.
That's fantasy sports. That's the devastation that is fantasy sports, Adam.
And it's just amazing how it works out sometimes. Pretty incredible. And that is our escape from the reality that is the NFL draft. All right, we want to thank our ESPN draft analysts, Matt Miller, Jordan Reed, for joining us today. Thank you, Daniel Dopp, for quarterbacking another six-pack, as well as the rest of the podcast. Thank you to our great producers, Christina Bussell, Sarah Abbott, and thank you, the listener, for tuning into another Adam Schefter podcast. Please join us again in this spot next week as we continue to hone in on the NFL draft from Detroit that is creeping closer and closer. Until then, have a great week, be well, and stay safe.